Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is Glenn Greenidge from the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and here with Jerry. What's up, Jerry? Jerry, can you hear me? Nope. Okay, Jerry and I are going to be hosting tonight, and we've got
Jerry. You didn't call him the real number.
Yes.
Hello, you guys are alive.
Okay.
Hello.
So Jerry is going to be hosting with me tonight. Jerry.
Yes, brother. All right. How you feeling, brother?
Okay, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm making it, but I'm here.
Okay, cool. Well, we got a hot show for you all tonight. We've got some conversations, some topics that, one topic in our topic that we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about the gentleman, Mr. Carter, who was found, Frederick Jeremy Carter, whose body was found Friday, December 3rd in North Greenwood, Mississippi. And he's a black man who was found hung, and the authorities are claiming suicide, but the NAACP is claiming otherwise. So we're going to be talking about that at the bottom hour of the show. And but right now what we do normally, to start off the day, we're going to do the declaration. The Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to be except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We grant being to the possibility and creation for unpredictable results. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, unity and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. And today's date is January 9th, 2011. And I'm here in New York City, Queens, Jamaica, Queens, New York. And Jerry, you want to just shout out? Okay.
Huh?
You shout out where you're from.
I was broken up. Oh, I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, Brooklyn, New York. So north, south, east, west, above, below, within. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. That's the International Black Summit Talk Show host, and that was the Declaration of the International Black Summit. I'm just going to actually take a quick moment and provide a little context for the show tonight. So one of the things that we are want to make available to you is for you to listen to some of the conversations, some of the distinctions, which are part of the tools of the International Black Summit, which are meant to empower you and to help you in the projects you're working on. So as we talk about things, I ask that you listen for how these things may make a difference in your projects or in your personal life, so that you can keep things moving forward for yourself. Jerry, we have a new practice and a new format that we're going to be doing tonight, and so one of the things that we are interested in extending, and why I say extending is that we're looking to have the Kwanzaa principles discussed all year long. So one of the things that we're going to be doing from here on in is taking a principle for tonight's show. So what principle are we going to be working on tonight, Jerry?
We're going to work on the principle 3, Ujima, collective work and responsibility. To build and make collective work and responsibility.
Okay, very good. Very good, very good. So that's what we're going to be working with. And how does that relate to the International Black Summit? Well, we at the International Black Summit are about empowering groups and individuals and organizations around utilizing their resources in the community. And so, you know, that's for any community. So it's not necessarily just for the Black community, but we offer these tools and the principles and some of the distinctions that we're speaking to help you to utilize that with what you're working on. Now, I mentioned the word distinction. So a distinction is, let me give you an example. So we have a particular distinction called noticing. And so what that distinction is used to do is for us to kind of come outside of ourselves and look at how we're approaching things, how we're, you know, what's our posture is. Are we angry? Are we upset? Or are we calm in whatever that interaction is? And one of the things that we do in noticing is that we kind of come out of ourselves and look at ourselves from an objective way of looking. And so we find that effective as a self-assessment of where we are. And so the distinction is one of the tools of the International Black Summit that we use to empower ourselves, to keep ourselves on track, and to keep ourselves on purpose as it relates specifically to the task at hand. So we got a couple callers out there, and we're going to be getting to you in a little bit, and wanted to point to what was what else do we need to be covering, Jerry? We've got a newer format, so I'm just trying to make sure that we cover the things that. We haven't talked about the annual event. So one of the things that we do at the International Black Summit, we have this event, and it's an event where people come in from all over the world, all over the country, and basically what we do is we engage in things that would empower ourselves, empower our community. If you go back to the Declaration, we said a lot of things, and what we get to do at the annual event is we get to work in those things. So each of us is coming there with a particular item of interest. For myself, I'm interested in community development. You know, and that's a relatively new thing for me, but that's the work that I'm doing. So I'm looking to do commercial real estate in a community called Farmers Boulevard in Queens, New York. And so with that, I am looking to get myself trained in my speaking and my way of being so that I can move those things forward. So I come there with that particular agenda. Jerry, what do you come to the International Black Summit looking to have it forward in your life?
Well, my life is the International, I just want to be a participant of the conversation.
Okay. So so what does that mean for you? Folks don't know what that means. So tell them what that means.
Tell them what that means. That you get, one of the distinctions that I learned about state of being plus being an authentic listener, and that also listen to if you, for me, for my vision is to look at it as a broader perspective, how you can see yourself in our community, especially African American community, and plus realize that means to work on it and see how much you could transform your life and see how much further you could take that vision. That's what it means to me.
Okay. So being in that conversation, staying in the conversation, and moving your items of interest forward. Okay, great. And so we have anywhere from 80 to 500 people in a room of Black African descent that are bumping up against, you know, what is it that they need, that they want to be working on. And where we come from is, if you're working on yourself, the people around you will be impacted, so that you can come there to work on yourself and know that your family is going to be impacted. The people that you work with are going to be impacted. The people that you socialize with will be impacted. So those are all of the kinds of things that will be being impacted by that. So that's the context, and it's always the first weekend in August, and it starts that Friday. But Thursday night is the big gala open event, and that's open to anybody. So anybody can actually attend the Thursday evening session.
Has arrived.
And so you have a full day Friday, full day Saturday, and Sunday. So those are the 3 days that we engage in this conversation, and people are kind of bumping up and looking at the kinds of things that are going to have them be more open, be more productive, be more able to accomplish results. So those are the kinds of things that we work on this weekend format. Anyway, that's what I want to say about that for now, and we may introduce some distinctions tonight as we're diving into the topic tonight. And again, the topic tonight is Frederick Jerome Carter, whose body was found in North Greenwood, Mississippi, hanged to death. And of course, the big conversation or the question around it is, was it suicide or was it a modern day lynching? So obviously none of us was there. And one of the things that is interesting is that there was not a whole lot of press about this that happened December 3rd. So we've got a couple of listeners out there.
Let me finish reading the press rule that I talked about.
Okay.
Okay, it means to build and maintain our communities together and to make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and to solve them together.
Very good. So interesting that would be the principle that got picked tonight is, would you read that last part again?
And to make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and to solve them together.
Absolutely. So that's really, that's perfect. because that's really what we're going to be engaging in tonight, is looking at it, not necessarily to solve that for, because obviously the brother man is gone, but what is it and who do we have to be so that we can watch each other's back, so that we can be more mindful and careful given that these kind of things are still occurring. So open up the listener lines. Press 1 if you'd like to comment. First of all, I'd like to hear from any of you who have actually seen the article or know about the information pertaining to the brother that was the 26-year-old brother that was found hung to death on December 3rd, 2010, in Greenwood, Mississippi. Got a couple of listeners out there. Press 1 if you'd like to come on the air.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing, okay, we've got somebody who just came up here. We've got 401-309. Go ahead, you're live on the air.
It's 504-309. What's happening, JT?
Hey, what's going on, brother? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I've been listening. I've been paying attention. But Greenwood, Mississippi, I used to deer hunt around there in my younger days. And there is Greenwood, Mississippi, where the guy got hung at.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me finish. And around there are some staunch KKK groups still in existence. They're not going to really come out and say, hey, I'm a KKK member, but when you go into a restaurant or to a grocery store or to a meat store, you know, a bunch of black deer hunters go up in there. They give you the cold shoulder, like they don't want to wait on you and stuff like that. But you know, we take it in stride. We used to take it in stride, so we stopped giving them our business. But that December lynching, like they say, it could be the end result of the Ku Klux Klan coming back in strength. It could be a small group of disgruntled white people who didn't want that boy to live longer than he was supposed to. That's all I can say. But it's down in Mississippi. Walk quiet and carry a big stick. That's all I got to say. Walk quiet and carry a big thunder stick at that. I'm not joking, man. Look, I live in New Orleans, and Greenwood ain't that far from New Orleans. Greenwood, matter of fact, is the hometown of Oprah Winfrey, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he's right.
Well, am I right or wrong? Am I right or wrong?
You might be right. I think it sounds familiar.
We're not disputing that at all. But one of the things that And it's interesting, depending on which article you read, if you read U.S. Today, it doesn't really say too much about it. But if you look at The Final Call, which is the Muslim paper, it also stated what you just stated in terms that Greenwood has been known to be very racially
segregated.
Segregated. It is a segregated community, and it's been known to be unfriendly to African Americans.
Thank you.
Which is a nice way of saying what you what you're pointing to.
Which is a polite way of saying it, which is politically correct.
Politically correct, right? Right. So,
you know, can I jump in here for a minute, Glenn?
Yeah, go ahead,
guys. This is Sadiq.
Sadiq, hey, go ahead.
You know, we laugh about it. And, you know, over here, it's very sad for me. This is 2011. And since Obama got in, I know most of us have noticed a rise in racial separation. It's and it's more than Obama. It's something, but it's been laying dormant, waiting for anything to ignite it, to bring it into fore. And I think it's very difficult for us to sit back and not look at this here where, you know, this is going on, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. What can we do as individuals? How do we, you know, so what I'm saying, it's not really a laughing matter. It happens, and we can make fun of it, but behind the fun, we need to look to see, well, okay, what do, you know, where did it go from here? What are we going to be a stand for in providing in this, you know, reintegration of racism? Well, I don't know if it's reintegration. I don't think it ever stopped. You know, it just was subtle or undercover or in the back, you know, on the back room, but it was always available. What do we do as people who are conscious as we are and have, would like to see something different? What do we do? You know, and I'd like somebody to share with, you know, with us, you know, what do they see in terms of what can we provide? Because I'm about, you know, I'd like to be about some kind of action. And maybe staying still is an action. I don't know. But it's just dear for me to say that.
Okay, Glenn, can I put something in there?
Yeah, go ahead. And then I'm after you.
All right. Okay, Mississippi is a rural state. You know, Mississippi has the lowest voter turnout amongst the blacks. Mississippi is the lowest rank, one of the lowest ranking states in the union in education. But yet, those white people down on Gulf Coast, where they got those big time casinos, big elaborate casinos, they're raking in the big dollars because the black politicians in New Orleans, which is about 50, 60 miles away, they got greedy. So the white folks took to Mississippi to hold them casinos. They have what you would call, they know how to rake in the monies, and money talks, BS walks. Excuse the French, but that's the way they see it. Your dollar has the same equal buying power as the white boy buying power. When a brother, I know this for a fact, who is a dope dealer, who makes $9,000 a week, goes down to the Chevrolet dealership or the Cadillac dealership and buys him a Cadillac Escalade with all that hard greenbacks, they don't ask no questions. That money talks, and he puts his money down on the table. You say, well, it's $56,000 for that Cadillac. Here's $56,000 in $100 bills. And he signs the paper. He drives off with the booker, you know what I mean? But the thing is, that's not the way the young blacks are supposed to do things. If he can make $9,000, $10,000 a week selling dope and coke and heroin, why can't he use that same intelligence to have a legitimate business like Maytag washing machines or automobile parts or something else legitimate-wise instead of going on the wrong side, the dark side? It's like Darth Vader and Han Solo and the Star Wars theme, the dark side and the bright side. Why does the young black man have to take the dark side to make his cash, to make his money, to buy the goods that he sees the white boy is making? Have you ever noticed, gentlemen, there's more blacks in the penitentiary than they got white boys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah. And trust me, we could do a whole show about that conversation, but I actually want to get back. There's two things, because I want to include what you said, because what you're pointing to is the economics of the South, okay?
Right.
And the Greenwood Mississippis have been able to maintain because of the economic infrastructure that is in place, that has been in place, that continues to be in place. Now, the other piece is for us to look at, and you said it earlier, you know, walk softly but carry a big thunder stick. I assert that one of the things that we certainly can begin to do is to be conscious and to be conscious of our surroundings and understanding that this is still occurring. Because for me, I think especially some of the younger African Americans our youth don't have lost sight that these kind of things are still existing. And, you know, he was 26 years old, and I would suggest that some of the things that used to be have been softened to the point where he maybe wasn't as read, didn't know it as much or whatever, but we, well, let me speak for myself. For me, as an older brother in the community, have a responsibility to school up these younger folks, you know, who I look for right now. I've got a 17-year-old nephew, and I've got a 10-year-old nephew, and then I've got a 14-year-old niece. And so I see that where I can be responsible is to let them know and to keep pointing to things so that they open their eyes to what's occurring. Because the young people in today's society are so caught up in the online, flash, Zoom, technology that they forget that things like this are existing, especially when it doesn't come mainstream. So, you know, one of the things when I looked on the internet, there was one hip-hop website that picked up on it. There was U.S. Today, Final Call has a website, and there maybe were three or four other that I noticed, you know, of different kinds of media outlets that are actually even advertising this at all. And I got to tell you, the U.S. Today spin is so soft-pedaling and back-pedaling, because the first thing they say, well, he's a mentally ill person. He's got a history of being mentally ill. When you have another one of the sources speak specifically about, yes, that might be true, but he was a happy kid. Yes, he did wander, and that was one of the things that he did. But you know, he wasn't problematic with it. He, you know, the stepdad was very clear that he did that, and so it wasn't a real big thing. So again, the point to the facts, and you know, we weren't there, we didn't see the evidence, but we have a suspicion that something funny took place, and that's the kind of conversation that I can have with my young people or people from the younger generation to let them know and to not to be asleep to what's going on around them. So that's certainly one conversation. Jerry, you want to add anything to this?
I think the one thing that we have to realize, one, too, when it comes back to me, is education. You know, sometimes we always want to put the blame on the young. You know, I'm not saying anybody that make that assumption, but to me, we always want to blame the young people. They, like, and I keep on saying again, I keep on beating this in our community. If you don't know about ourselves, what do you think they're supposed to be? And it takes the older generation and this generation who have the knowledge and the intellect to teach our history and teach the one who had died for us so we can have this opportunity. And I feel that we talking about the march of the march on Montgomery and the march 1963 and any type of march that us as people of color has stood for. And these are the kids, we need to tell them that. We need to get back and say, listen, it's all right marching, but when you march on whatever you fight for or anything, any rights, you have to be sustained for it. And I feel like Dr. Martin Luther King had done that. Malcolm X has done that. Paul Robeson has done it. Lena Horne. Harriet Tubman, I can go on and on. So what we have to understand what they, we got to make sure to teach our kids about our history. It is much more essential right now. Right now, we got to teach our kids. We got to do whatever we can
to address these issues to our kids. So, because it's all about survival out here. You know, everybody want to go to this college or that college or have their own businesses, and they figure they make it. Nah, this is the way I feel. If my brother and sister don't make it, that means I ain't made it. So it's
right.
A struggle. It's on.
Well, you know, that points to one of the distinctions that we have at the International Black Summit called Know Out There. And so it's not about for us to look out there for somebody else to take care of this or somebody else to address it or someone else to deal with it. It's really for each and every one of us who are listening to this conversation to now do something about it. And to do something about it could take lots of different forms. And so, you know, we're all creative and creative, intelligent individuals, and we have the opportunity to look to see, you know, what am I, the person in my underwear, going to be doing about this conversation. So I'm actually going.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to put us on a hold. I'm going to put us on a hold for a second. We're going to come back to this conversation. Jill has got some dates for some upcoming events that we want to get to, and then we're going to get right back to this conversation. Jill?
Yes. Good evening. How's everybody doing?
Okay.
I'm Jill in Atlanta, and we do have some shares that are going on this month. And for those that you do not know, shares are like information sessions about the International Black Summit. We have an Atlanta share on January 15th. And we have the contact number is 678-428-0513. That's 678-428-0513. We have a share in Missouri, this the Lee Summit, Missouri share, and the contact number there is 310-714-6619. That's 310-714-6619. We have a share in Baltimore on January 16th, and the contact number there, well, the contact information is an email address, and that's salima Marriott at Comcast.net. That's salima Marriott at Comcast.net. And there's also a share in Chicago, which is January 17th, and Henrietta is on the line, and she'll share that contact information as well. I also want to remind everyone about MLK Day, and just remember that this is not a day off, but a day on. And we just want to acknowledge Martin Luther King during this month of January. Thank you, Glenn.
Very good, very good, very good. And those summer shares are critical. If you're a listener and you don't know about the International Black Summit and you hear the conversation that we're inviting you to, these summit shares are a place for you to get some more information, meet some people who are in the conversation of the International Black Summit, and you get a feel for it. You know, we only have an hour here, and we're dealing with topics, but we're also trying to give you some feedback and some information around what's happening and what it's like. So it's, you know, the summit share, I want to describe it. The summit share is like, you know, when you're at Thanksgiving dinner and you could smell the you know, the turkey cooking and maybe the ham and the sweet potatoes and
alligator,
you know,
tail.
Things, well, alligator tail if you're down south, you know, you begin to get those aromas and you get a sense. Now you haven't had the meal yet, but you can get a sense of what the meal, you know, some anticipation. So these summit chairs are like that. So it's a place for you to go and to kind of get the goods on what is getting cooked up and what's available for you. And so you can go there to really get your questions answered, find out information. We have prerequisites that are scheduled all around the country, actually all around the world, And so each of these summits will then give you some information so that you can do prerequisites ahead of time. But we also have, if you don't, we have a prerequisite the Thursday before the annual event. So we have that prerequisite that Thursday morning, then that Thursday night we have this big gala event to kind of welcome people into that home city, and then we get to work on Friday morning at 9 o'clock. So that kind of gives you the setup and gives you the idea of the importance of the summit shares, the importance of the prerequisite, and how that fits in. And, oh, by the way, those prerequisites are standalone. So those are opportunities for you to get the work of the summit so you can get to work in your community on your projects in your life. So anyway,
and
so the topic
Glenn, this is
yeah,
Jill.
Go ahead, Jill.
This is Jill, the oxygen room. If someone could just mute their phone so we can listen, that would be great. And if there's anyone in the oxygen room that would like to share or have a comment, please feel free. And anyone that called in on the switchboard, remember just press 1 if you want to say something. Thanks, Glenn.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. So tonight's conversation, we're talking about the brother that was found in Greenwood, Mississippi, Mr. Frederick Jeremy Carter. And we're looking at what can we do as individuals to not let that happen again, not let that happen in our community. So so I know, let's get back. Sadiq, I think you had a comment or you wanted to share before we went on break.
Henrietta
has left the conference.
Okay. So
is that Henrietta?
I wanted to say that
you can actually kill someone or choke someone to death if you put your fingers or your hands around their neck and slowly, very slowly squeeze, and they won't make a, you know, they won't have a fight. If you slowly squeeze them to death. And I see that I'm saying that the preference of what I'm about to say, which is, okay, I want to say some, put something else in the mix. About 3 or 4 months ago, they had an educational forum around the world. It was 32 countries, I believe. U.S. came in number 25. China was one, Korea, Japan, like that. They came in, you know, way ahead of us. And I'm saying that to say, with all of what's going on, you know, we blame it on the youth. And the older folks did that to us. At least I recall that, you know. And I think that you can't. So if you have an intelligent society, a thinking society, you can't rule them as I think we're being ruled, or do the things to them that's being done to our young people. And I say it's being done to them because first they dummy us up. And then they feed us a lot of bull. And the older folks are so busy trying to make a dollar because we've got 2 cars now. Mom and dad work because we need a 4 or 5 bedroom house because we've got these kids. And, you know, we'd like to have that. And they are, for the most part, left unattended. So those are, you know, the things that I just want to put in perspective. We have that. And in addition to that, we have absolutely no Black leaders, and we need leaders. I remember one time somebody went to Roosevelt and was complaining about something, and Roosevelt said, "Make me do it." And he did. He just went past that and kept on coming, "Oh, we need this and we need that." And Roosevelt said to him, "Make me do it." As a president, he couldn't just go out and do it. But so the guy went and told someone else, and as a result of that, the guy said, "Well, let's make him do it." And they got together, I forgot how many hundreds of people, and they marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. And Roosevelt said, "The people are calling me. I've got to go." I'm saying that about Obama, or for Obama's sake. He can't on his own do anything, and we have no leaders to make him do anything. He wants to do a lot of things for us. But there's no Black leader out there to step up to the plate. All white, I don't care which kind of color leader it is, to be honest with you. As long as somebody steps up to the plate and the people have their respect, and, you know, so we can make him do it. He can't do it on his own. And what's going on with the kids in education is piss poor. So there's a lot of things that we need to look at and see how we, as an international background, what can we do? Now, I know the youth are doing well, and there is enough of us. We need to have that critical mass. You know, everybody knows about the critical mass. Until we generate a critical mass, stuff will continue to happen. You know, and don't forget, Mississippi was where those two young girls went in the store and stole, I believe, $11 or $15 worth of stuff and got double life sentence. You know, I mean, they were hungry, yeah, for God's sake. And we sat by and let it happen. I said we, because all of us across the nation, you know, let that happen.
So
what do we do?
I completely hear you, and what I hear you pointing to and speaking to is for us as individuals to get active in our community, to go out to your community boards, to go out to your in New York City, we've got council people, we've got assembly men, we've got Congress people, we've got state senators, as well as U.S. senators. All of those folks, we should know what they're up to, and we should be a demand for them to be doing something about the education of our children. And if there's not something being done, then we need to organize ourselves to have the things happen. Because we can only be accountable for ourselves and our community, but we can create a groundswell. You know, so those things are certainly things that we as individuals can do. Because here's the thing. When we see something going on in our community and we turn the other way, it's the same as killing that young boy in Greenwood. We're not doing anything different. When we allow our communities to be dysfunctional and to not and to take us for granted and to not sweep our streets and not educate our children and to not provide us with the services that we should be provided as a human being, when we do that, we're allowing our community to kill people in our community. Yes, this hanging, it was a more physical demonstration of that, but yes, we're allowing that to happen in our community when we're not taking a stand and being active. So I absolutely agree with you. It's something that each of us as an individual needs to take ownership to and stand up and be accounted for, because there ain't going to be no other leaders. We the leaders. Y'all listening in the call are the people that are going to get it done, okay? And if we are looking for someone else, you know, we have another distinction in the summit that is not as well known as some of the other ones, but the cavalry is not coming to save us. The cavalry is not coming. So it's about what we on this call are going to do. So we've got some callers out there. If you'd like to get on the air, if you'd like to make a comment, concern, outrage on what has happened, press 1 so that we can see you and we can get you on the air, because we've got quite a few people that are listening in the 410 area code, the 401 and 312. So if you've got a comment, please press 1, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about this atrocity. Anyone in the oxygen room?
Anyone in the oxygen room that would like to make a comment, feel free to make a comment as well.
Hey, Glenn.
Does anybody want to make a comment?
Yeah, not to you, JT, but you can listen in to JT. But anyway, this is what I got to say, Glenn. When I was back at a certain university here in New Orleans, I had a black female professor who taught educational philosophy, And she got up in front of the class of 57 of her students, including me, and she said, well, I got mine. Y'all got to get yours. Now, what kind of teacher would be that be to talk down to graduate students, and that way, you know, she could have went more tactile in the situation, like get on the ball, students, you know. She told us in certain words, look, I got my degree, I got my position, and now you get yours. That don't give nobody no hope.
Well, you know, different people motivate people different ways. And I hear how you heard it, but I'm wondering if that's how she meant it from her standpoint. Because I can also hear that she's saying, yes, I've got mine, and I want you to get yours, and I'm showing you this as a motivational tool, as a something to go for, to stand for, to achieve. So I personally can take that like, oh, okay, like a challenge. Like, I got mine, what you going to do? Because it's going to take all of us getting that. You hear what I'm saying, brother?
I got you. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, this white boy professor I had at this university in New Orleans could not answer a pertinent question about how does man acquire knowledge through the five senses. So I proposed a question to the professor in such a way that man is not complete, because if he was born deaf and blind, he's out of the box. He doesn't have all of the five senses to collect that knowledge. So he politely brushed this question off of him and presented it to the class. Now, when I challenged him, I said, wait a minute, Prof, don't give it to the classmates of mine. I'm asking you. You the professor. We the students. I want to hear the answer from you. Because these Vietnam veterans don't want to take no crap off you. Talk your stuff. Let me know what you think about this question. So he said, well, Mr. Martinez, we got to get a consensus of the class, of the students in the class, about how does man acquire senses through the smell, through the sight, through the hearing, through the taste, through the feeling. I said, well, if you're born deaf and blind, that's two that you don't have. So how you going to be complete in acquiring knowledge of the universe? And, man, I got to be in that man's class for challenging him. No joke. I wasn't going to sit down there like a bum of the law, because back in high school, those Josephite priests out of Baltimore, Maryland, said, look here, little brothers, don't sit down there, don't ask a question. There ain't no question stupid or ignorant. When you don't know something, raise your hand. So I raised my hand like I was taught in high school. Look here, sucker, answer this here question. And,
You gotta admit, you came up. Look at the education that you had. You had your mom who had started that school in New Orleans,
right?
And of course she was training you, but she also sent you to the top schools wherever she could in New Orleans, right? So you went to the top schools.
I started off with her, went up to the public school, got kicked out of public school. She put me in parochial school, almost got kicked out of parochial school until I went to St. Augustine High School, where those Josephite priests kind of instilled discipline up my spine, if you know what I'm trying to say.
How did they instill the discipline?
Oh, yeah, they're very disciplined. Them boys. Like,
how did they do that?
Huh?
What was the manner in which they instilled the discipline?
Well, for one thing, you had to come into school wearing a coat and tie on every day, even though it was, you know, summertime, springtime was around the corner. And if you had to be in your classroom for 7:15, you would not be outside of your classroom. There were certain rules and regulations. They didn't tolerate no foolishness. They would jack you up in a New York second if you messed up. If you got caught sleeping in trigonometry class, if you got caught cheating in physics class, if you got caught snoozing, sleeping in the French class or Latin class, they bring you down to the principal's office, and he'll wear you behind out for five licks, and then send you back to class. By the time you get back to class, you're wide awoke because you're behind on fire.
Well, we see, depending on how old you are and where you were, because I heard stories. You know, I never went to Catholic school, but I heard stories about the nuns and with the rulers.
Oh yeah, they did that to me too. 7th and 8th grade, put me on my knees and smacked them knuckles.
And then I remember back in the West Indies in Guyana, when if you didn't have your stuff together, you walked up to the front of the classroom, they said bend over, and they had some canes that they would demonstrate for the rest of the class, and you'd be the demonstratee, okay?
I just like in the army, they say demonstrate a post. They pick any guy in the army barracks. You the whipping dog. You the whipping post for that particular day. Any demonstration for karate or self defense or taking out the enemy soldier, you was a demonstrator. That's the same thing in Catholic school. The same thing in high school. If you muck 'em up, if you messed up, you were the prime example of what not to do. And that,
right.
Well,
no, guys,
yes,
I went to a Catholic boarding school.
Yeah, that's what happened.
The painting he spoke about, I had that.
Yeah.
And I want you to know, I have a 39-year-old before this year, a 35-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 9-month. And I have never hit any of my kids. Well, the 9-month, sure. But, you know, I mean, the 39-year-old, never hit any of them. Because that's that physical stuff, you know, teaching the kid how to be physical. And if you can't sit and talk to me and tell, you know, talk to, it's like you're going to beat them into submission. Why can't you just talk? You know, we just, we have our kids and we love them and we can talk to them. But a lot of people believe you spare the rod and spoil the child. So turn, bend over, let me, you know, whip that butt. And I don't know. We're teaching our kids to be physical, I think. You know, but it may not be.
It's an interesting conversation because you can get people on both sides that are very passionate. Hold on a second. We've got a caller. Caller on the line. 410-262. Go ahead. You're live on the air. Oh. Disappeared. Must have scared them. Okay. I don't know what happened. I guess they're gone.
Yeah.
All right. But you're right. There's a lot of controversy around that, and we can certainly have a show around discipline. How do you rear your kids? But I want to keep on track. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to find out if anyone else wants to speak to or talk about specifically the alleged. We can't say it's a lynching for sure, but it certainly is very, very suspicious that the gentleman went into a known hostile white community and hung himself in the middle of town. The likelihood of that seems pretty strange. We're going to also continue this conversation in the Oxygen Room. The number is 218-862-6420. The access number is 797-4834-pound. Again, 218-862-6420, 797-4834-pound. And we'll have that a continuation conversation from 9 to 9:30, and we'll be in there for 10 minutes. If no one shows up, then we will cancel it at that point in time. But we wanted to let you know, as we've got about 5 minutes left to wrap the show up. Henrietta, did you want to give us that information for the summit here in Chicago?
Hi. Yes, Glenn, thank you. We're having a summit share. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can. You're on air.
All right, thank you. We're having a summit here in Chicago where the annual event is taking place, by the way, August 4th through the 7th. So go to our website, blacksummit.org, and find out more information about the annual event. But our summit share is in 1 week on King's, the day that King's birthday is celebrated, January 17th at 1 p.m. You can contact me at transformativetalk@gmail.com for more information. Transformativetalk@gmail.com or go to blacksummit.org. That's next Monday, 1 p.m., a summit share. Thank you, guys.
No problem.
Thank you. Henrietta is also one of the hosts, as well as Jill, who gave the early announcement. We're all part of the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We've got about two minutes of open time. I see another caller came in, 973-674. Go ahead. You're live on the air.
Yes, my name is Rasul Amin. I'm calling from East Orange, New Jersey. I just got on the show. I like that number again for the to go into the phone call after this goes off.
Okay, that's the oxygen room. It's
218-862-6420.
And the access number is 797-4834-POUND.
4834-POUND?
Pound, yes.
Yeah.
Did you want to comment about the gentleman that was found hanged in Greenwood, Mississippi?
No, because what happened was when I tuned into your room, you were just talking about that, and I want to find out more. And I see you only got 4 minutes left, so I'm going to call into the room.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hold
on, good. And brother, there's a website that you can go on today, flyinwest.com, and you can find out more about that. You can find out more about that story too.
You're breaking up. There's noise. I can't hear you.
Yeah, you're echoing. Give them that information in the oxygen room, Jerry.
Yeah,
okay.
We gave them the oxygen room in a few minutes.
Okay.
Thanks. We've got a caller 410-262. Go ahead. You're live on the air. We've got about a minute left. Okay. Not sure what's happening with that caller.
Hello?
Somebody's got their speaker on in the oxygen room.
Hello?
Hello?
Someone's got their speaker on in the afternoon.
This is Chakasha.
410, is that you?
Yes.
You got less than a minute.
Okay,
quickly.
I just wanted to once again acknowledge and give honor to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday will be January 15th, and just remind us of all of the work that he did around these issues. And also just wanted to speak out for young people. Young people are doing amazing things. Also remember Dr. King started college at the age of 15. So we know our young people have the potential, are being the potential. And that's the message I want to send out to them.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Jakesha is one of our members of the talk show team, and she is actually not going to be hosting any shows specifically, but she's going to be doing a lot of the back office support going forward. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. You can get certainly any more information that you'd like on our website, www.blacksummit.org. And that's, there's lots of information posted there. We're located in Blog Talk Radio, and we come to you live every Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. We've got about 15 seconds. Jerry, just anything you want to close it out with?
Oh, and I can say this much, that struggle continues on.
All right.
That's all
this
I can say.
This is Glenn Greenwich and Jerry. What we're doing is we do this every week. We love you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for participating. And come back and let's have some other empowerment conversations. Peace and blessings. Enjoy your week. Ciao.
Good. Peace.
Let me get out.